Today we're diving into a scandal that has shaken the country to its core for over two decades and is considered one of the
biggest miscarriages of justice in British history.
The controversy revolves around the Horizon computer system, introduced in 1999 across post office branches by ICR Pathway, a Fujitsu subsidiary, which was supposed to be a revolutionary solution for improving transactions and fraud detection. However, it was plagued with errors that not only allowed malevolent individuals to exploit the system, but also led to unwarranted accusations of financial wrongdoing against numerous post office branch managers known as sub-postmasters. The sub-postmaster we're talking to today reveals that problems started appearing soon after the system was put in place. Luckily, they managed to escape the severe consequences that others weren't so fortunate to avoid.
Some of the 700 former sub-postmasters wrongly accused of theft, fraud, and false accounting.
Facing severe consequences such as imprisonment, financial ruin, and being ostracized by their own communities. The turning point in this entire saga came to light 20 years later when in 2019, the High Court acknowledged the software's deficiencies, paving the way for a public inquiry the following year. By 2021, the UK Court of Appeal made a groundbreaking decision to overturn 39 convictions.
And we suddenly realised that this was a very, very big scandal.
However, it is the resurgence of public interest in the scandal, significantly driven by the ITV drama Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, that has truly thrust this issue back into the spotlight.
I don't know if you saw the drama, but I thought it was just beautifully constructed.
Driven by a strong desire to uncover and share the personal stories behind one of the country's biggest scandals, I visited this post office.
First of all, what I want to find out is, who are you? What's your background? How does your story connect to, I guess, everything that's been going on recently in terms of in the news and in the media about post office scandal?
So I'm Uncle Sander. So we've been here since 1982 when my parents and my uncle and auntie bought this building that we're in now.
Yeah.
So it's been all co-op building. So in some of the local pubs, restaurants, you'll see pictures of the area from when it used to be. So when they bought it, I was a week old and we all moved here. We were here for 2001, so I would have been 17, 18 when we separated as a family. So okay. My aunt and uncle, they had the chippy, they went and bought a house, we kept the shop.
Okay.
We kept here. And then since then, our family's been here since running the shop. And then we had the chippy, like I said, next door, which I've just bought back actually, because my aunt and uncle have now retired.
So if anyone, nice.
So if anyone wants to buy a chippy, for sale. And then it's been a family affair, like all independent businesses like this. Mum, dad, aunt and uncle ran it for most of the time. Then obviously when I was in 2001, when my dad ran it with the staff, and then dad's house took a turn, so he asked me to come back and take over, which I happily did. And then since then, we've been here since. So we had another shop in Derby as well, which my two brothers ran. That didn't go so well, so we sold that.
Okay.
Moved on. So then we've just kept this since, and then that's kind of where
kind of
been.
Stories connect.
Yeah,
cool.
Pretty much.
What was it like then, kind of? I'm just interested in terms of those dynamics. So your parents, your aunt and uncle, you start off here in this building. And then, like, how much maintenance goes into the building in terms of, like, are you guys having to redo it, skin it?
So, when we came here in 82, all the flats were renovated. So, at that point, we only had this flat, which is one living room, two bedrooms, one kitchen, one bathroom. At that point, there would have been 8, 9 maybe of us, so mum, dad, auntie, uncle, Jess, Gio and Kinder and me. So there were 8 and Hominda. So there was 9 of us originally.
Oh wow, okay.
And then eventually, then my brother came, there was 10. Yeah. And it was getting too big, obviously. There was too many people in 2 bedrooms basically. So then the tenant that used to stay in the flat that's behind you now, he eventually left, and then each family had each side.
Oh,
so mum and dad had one bedroom, the other bedroom, the boys were in one room, the girls were in the other room. That was literally it until 2001.
Oh wow, okay.
On top of each other. Yeah,
so that must have been a lot of fun though, everyone
growing
to school.
Yeah, we used to play, everyone. So that kind of dynamic was good in the sense that obviously you said your cousins that were living with you, so that at the most there were 18, maybe 20 people in this house, sleeping, living. Because my baba would come from India. Then relatives would send their kids to come and work here in the school holidays.
Okay.
And they'd be here for months on end.
Bloody hell.
People from Banbury, Leeds, Derby, Coventry. family members would come and have to do that, but that's kind of what it was.
That's part of it, isn't it?
So uncle and dad would go in their van with all the other family members, go cash and carry with whoever we were staying. And that was kind of the thing for years, like years on end, really.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Now,
it was then.
Obviously, the reason that we are having this conversation is because of the fact that the post office kind of has come back into the public conscious, so to speak. Because I'm of an age, and I'm sure there are people out watching it who hopefully are of a similar age, that remember when the scandal first broke and when kind of it was in the news, when it wasn't actually that it was a scandal, so to speak, it was more so what was going on at the post office and just the reporting on it. Now, could you paint a picture then of, I guess at that age, did you ever actually understand or know what was going on? And was there like a change in things?
So, my first knowledge of it was coming home and mum and dad had had a disagreement, and then it never really pieced together properly until this time around now, when it's come back into the media and it's never really come around in the press or in my own consciousness to put two and two together and think, oh yeah, that happened to us. Because originally, right from the beginning, when we had the post office, there was a local greengrocer down the road here. That family was retiring and they needed somewhere else to put the post office. So mum and dad put their hand up, said, yeah, we'll have it in the shop. Great. Off we went.
Oh, so the shop when you first bought it was just a shop? It wasn't a post office, it was a corner shop, and then you added in the
So the shop as it sits now, there were three shops back in the old days. So if I remember correctly, there was a greengrocer's, a fish and chip shop, and another building.
Yeah.
And the co-op had it, made it into two units, I think. Then we took it on as one.
Okay.
So technically downstairs used to be three units, which is now just one that we operate
in. Oh, wow, okay.
So originally it was just the shop. Then we introduced the post office when that greengrocer that was locally, he retired, we had it off him. Initially there was no problems because it used to be an old-fashioned ledger, first-class stamps, mail orders, whatever it was.
That's
how many you've got, that's how many you sold, that's how much it is.
Yep.
It was literally old-fashioned. There were never any issues in that sense. And then we went on to the first version of accounting software, which was an old MS-DOS based one. It was literally a carbon copy of what was in the ledger, was in that.
On a computer.
Without any issue.
Yeah,
that ran for
a
few years. And then eventually when they introduced Horizon System here, I can remember originally there was a guy called Brian, who was an old sort of postmaster from God Was a Boy, because he was in the army originally. Then when he became a postmaster, came and worked here because he was recommended by the post office. He's free, he wants a bit of part-time work.
Why not?
And then he came and he was a soul to the earth. He was brilliant. So then he retired, and then we had another guy who was a foreman and a manager at the pits back in the old days. So then when he was over here, he was looking for work after he'd finished another job. Started to work here part-time also, Frank, absolutely brilliant. So these are two guys that you know you trust with your life, no issues whatsoever. And at this point, mum and dad had never ever left the shop unattended without one of us being here or locking up. These were the first people they trusted to lock the shop up with the staff while we all went to a wedding together for the first time.
Okay.
So in the old days, somebody had to stay at home while they all
went out.
Where they went to their party, somebody would have to stay. These were the kind of pits. So these were the people we first trusted to ever look after the shop for us. Ever.
Okay, I see what
you're someone always had to be here. So that's how much we trusted them. And it was reciprocal in the case that, so when Horizon was first introduced, you had week one.
Yeah.
They came, they showed them how to use the system, trained them, because then the post office sent somebody for a whole week and showed you how to do it. So they were both being trained at the same time, learning how to use the software.
Yeah.
And by the end of the week, I think it's a couple of quid here or there. No issue, no drama, nothing you wouldn't think of. That could happen on a normal day.
Even with a ledger and whatever, right? Okay.
So week two comes, they're learning, seeing what's going on. Well, week three, the issue becomes that it's showing a £92,000 loss.
92?
Yeah. So they rang the post office and said, right.
Bloody hell.
So they rang the post office, and bearing in mind then, if it didn't balance, they'd be in there half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours.
Trying to make it balance.
Correct, yes. And over the years, this happened several times, but not to the extent of the first instance, because in the third week, they rang up and said, something's not right, what's going on?
Yeah.
The following day, I can remember it now, somebody came from the post office, corrected the system, and off they went. Nobody thought nothing of it. Never even thought about it again until recently, when all this has been going
on. Oh, wow, okay.
And it's something, even in my mum's head, she never even thought about it. Just in the back of her head, we didn't have to pay that money back.
They corrected
the system. And this is why I said we are lucky in that sense that we could have been one of those people where they made us pay back.
Yeah.
And we weren't, so we were lucky in that sense. So in the subsequent years after that, there'd be instances where I'd hear mum and dad, they'd have a conversation, well, you've got to give me the money, I've got to put it in, and dad would be like, no, I'm not. And it'd be the back and forth, like, how's it happened? Why is it happening for? There's only mum working in there, and there would have been Frank, and they're both looking at each other, dad's looking at them both, and you're questioning people that you trust.
Yeah. And your mum's family and friends.
It's the friction that it causes. And I can remember it, and unfortunately, so we're in the process now trying to reconcile what we think we should claim for now.
Yes.
But that figure doesn't detract away from my dad having passed away 10 years ago, not necessarily having the knowledge that it wasn't anyone that worked for him or any one of us or one of his family members that was doing it. And that's the galling part of it, that he has thought at some point someone stealing from him, whether it be one of us, whether it's his own wife.
But that is the pain.
And people that he considered to be his friend.
Yeah.
And the dawning moment and the embarrassing moment for me was when I watched the programme, I came to work the following day and apologised to mum and said, because I've done the same thing. So it's in the 12 or 13 years that I've been here now, we've had a couple of issues as well, which we're investigating to see, what was it that, wasn't it, could it...
What's the cause of those issues?
And unfortunately, the system was still susceptible to fault at that time. So even I've done the same thing my dad did. And that's galling to think.
So, just from what you said then, has the system... So the system is still the same system. So if you're being able to make the same problems...
Well, right. This is the thing. I have listened, watched and read as much as...
Everything. You could. Yeah.
There is no concrete assertion that system is still robust. Other than the post office themselves...
Saying
we're not aware of any issues. And the people that are saying it are people I wouldn't trust as far as I could trust.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, even the new CEO, he's another one. Sitting there in the committee last week, the week before. This question was asked, how do we know the system is right? We're not aware of any current issues. I'm like...
But, so, just we'll come back to this in a sec. But just going back to the point where you say the first time that you yourself or your family experienced this issue, £92,000 difference in the books, and the post office send someone out to fix it.
Yeah.
So my question actually is you guys aren't obviously the only family, and there must be on record somewhere how many times or how many places they've sent people. Like, doesn't that prove the system isn't robust?
Eventually, yes. The issue you have is there's a pattern of individuals within the post office either now saying that they were instructed to do certain things and say certain things, and some of the things they were instructed to do was destroy evidence.
Oh, wow.
So that's a secondary factor. So when you go to them now and say, can I have this data from that point?
They might have got it.
And they will have also. And within the programme, in terms of not giving full disclosure to people and obviously expecting people to understand, false accounting is as bad as theft.
So
people's thought process was at times, unfortunately, false accounting isn't as bad as theft. Unfortunately, in the court of law, it is.
It is, yeah.
And this is where some people got caught up because they weren't being honest and saying, for example, there's no proof of theft, but there's proof of false accounting. But then if you can't prove the theft...
Yeah, how can you prove the false accounting? Because you need to prove it when it's gone, right?
Which is what they ultimately went after people for.
There was actually a lady who I'd been put in touch with in Birmingham, who eventually backed out of having a conversation. But what was interesting in her situation was there was a lady who worked for her, and this is all in the public domain, and she was taken to court and all the rest of it, but there was a lady who worked for her who used the Horizon scandal as an excuse when she was basically shifting money into her own account.
Yeah.
Now, how do you think those type of people who have seen those loopholes and kind of used them to their advantage, how do you think that's affected the way the rest of you guys who are actually innocent and have just been victim to a shitty computer system, how do you think that influences and impacts on the way you guys are then perceived by the post office or the public in general?
There aren't many documented instances of what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those people have kept quiet, shifted to one side and gone off. However, that does not mean they're not there.
Yeah.
The post office have said, and people do say, some people will unfortunately get convictions quashed now that shouldn't be. But how do you tell
prove them?
Correct. So there are people, unfortunately, employees that have used the scandal to their advantage in examples like you've just given.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's but this is where the post office have known about faults in the system and have not rectified them sufficiently enough to allow, whether it be a member of staff, branch manager, or whoever it is, to take advantage of the system still.
Okay.
But then the onus and the liability still falls on the postmaster. However, they've still prosecuted the postmasters, even when it's their staff that have taken advantage of the system.
Oh, wow.
So I was talking to a Fed rep recently, and one of them was around this type of instance where the member of staff was blaming the system, saying,
yep,
because of what's going on, it's got to be the
it's
system.
It's got to be that, yeah, yeah.
And the post office and the branch manager have basically said, well, it can't be because obviously there's cameras and everything else. It was that the person was being nefarious in what they were actually doing. But then it was trying... It's going to become very difficult to tell the difference between somebody who's been honest and somebody who's doing it deliberately.
Yeah, yeah,
so I wouldn't envy being the person.
No, agreed, completely. I can't disagree. Just going back to the first incident that you spoke about this £92,000, they send someone out, they fix the system, and it makes sense. Like, even if I put myself in your shoes at that point, you wouldn't bat an eyelid. You just think, it's like his and when the boiler gets broken, you ring the guy and comes, fixes it, and he goes, right?
Switch it back off again.
Yeah. You wouldn't ever think twice. Now, do you think it was just luck that you guys happened to have someone be sent out by the post office and fix it?
Yeah.
Because...
Pure luck. Yeah, because to pure luck at the beginning, because when you've heard people from Fujitsu giving evidence and it stacks up that they knew from the beginning there were these issues, there was those issues, they could change things if they needed to or somebody would come. That type of example is becoming more and more prevalent in people's evidence, where someone has said something and it's them being believed is part of the issue. And then now with more, and it's, I think the correct, I wouldn't say it's disappointing, but the lack of whistleblowers is concerning, in the sense that people still feel afraid to come forward and say, right, this is what this line manager was telling us to do, this is how we did it, this is where we did it, this, but, and basically coming out and saying that we were told to do things and the people that were telling us to do it. And that's concerning, that people are still not coming out and saying specifically who told them to do what.
Do you also think, though, that that is because some of them, like, going back to the fact that there were people who were aware there were loopholes, and that, like, I'm not saying all the whistleblowers are nefarious to a degree. What I'm saying is that, considering how hot and volatile the situation is, and people are being convicted for essentially not having done anything wrong, like, who would ever in their right mind want to throw themselves into that? I understand from where you're standing, which is whistleblower would help put it into context.
I think the initial whistleblower eventually came forward when it became clearer that they'd have the protection of the court. And that's,
yes,
and that's only recently. And
yes,
I'm talking, I think it was 5 years ago or something, that person eventually went to court and said, right, this is what happened. It might have been a bit longer, actually. And it's only in that time frame. Now, I'm talking about stuff that happened over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
From then, even up till now, there are very few all that have come forward. And even now, with the knowledge and the protections that are available to whistleblowers now, that's the disappointing part that I'm talking about. Because when, I think there'll be an element of people feeling culpable and, am I going to be blamed? There's going to be part of that. But then equally, there should be a part now where people say, right, so... It's widely known what was going on, what was at fault, and now it's more of a question of getting the post office to admit what they've done. Because Fujitsu literally threw them under the bus.
Well, Fujitsu came out, the guy said...
This year, hands up.
Yeah.
they knew that we knew that they knew, they didn't tell you when they knew.
Yeah.
That's basically what it's So Fujitsu have done something right, however, admittedly 20 years too late.
Yeah.
The post office has still got that attitude that...
It's not us.
It's not. I have experience of the current post office CEO.
Yeah.
So he used to be the CEO of NISA, who are our supplier for the shop.
Cool, I understand. Right. Okay.
So when I see him talking, I know that he's slippery.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he embodies all the bad behaviours that the post office have exhibited for decades. In suppressing people, doing things at extremely slow pace. So he came in, made a token gesture with the first settlement, knowing full well it was underhand in the sense that it was far too small.
Yeah.
Hence why you've now got the subsequent claims going on
to
increase the compensation. But the thing that he could and should have done is sped up the payment process and the claim process. And why is it so difficult for somebody to go into the post office, because there's only one shareholder, the government, and say, right, there's my USB stick, put everything on there.
And let's go through it.
And let's go
through
it.
Yeah.
No one's done that.
No.
Because, unfortunately, this is where the post office have been allowed to get away with it, because they know they've got the backing of the government's funding. They spent, I think the gentleman's name was Lee Castleton, I think they spent about £250,000, £300,000 litigating his case to recover £25,000. Because it's mining your taxpayer money they'll be using
to get the £25,000.
To get the £25,000.
See.
And this is where, because they knew they had the weight and they had the might to suppress people, if they came to me and said, right, we're taking you to court, which technically something I said in the other podcast, they probably could, but I'm not bothered. Because the company that he worked for before sent me a letter and said, if you talk about this, we're going to take you to court. Not this specifically, something else.
Yes.
I said, well, you can take me to court. I've spoken about what's on record for it.
There's nothing that I'm adding to this.
I made an apology for one thing by naming two people who shouldn't have been named.
Fair.
But
everything,
I held my hands up and we moved on.
Yeah.
But he lost his job.
Says a lot.
Exactly.
Says a hell of a lot.
Yeah. And he's there doing the same thing again, because it all came down to he didn't have permission to pay bonuses. There was a meeting of the board agreed no bonuses are going to be paid. He went above the board, went to the chairman, they agreed between them, you can pay X, Y, Z, but in all the documentation, all the contracts, in all the agreements, you don't have the authority to do it. Now that man got his bonus, thank you very much, see you later, did the same thing at the post office. The same culture of, right, how do we enrich ourselves and make it look like we're doing something good? So the money he gave back was like £6,000-£7,000 for the incentive payment for being compliant with the committee hearing. It's your legal obligation to do that, not to get paid to do it.
Yeah.
But then, this is what I say, this is where the post office, so Fujitsu have got ahead of them, threw them under the bus, and they've still got that attitude of, hold on a minute, because it's not their money. They're hiding behind the cover of the protections the government give them.
How much do you think it would be different if it was still a public-owned company and it wasn't owned by the government? Like, as in, because it went into, obviously, the government ownership.
That was Royal Mail.
Not
went private. Office. Royal Mail had gone private.
But the post office is still...
Post office, unfortunately... technically private, but the only shareholder is
the government.
The government.
Oh, I didn't realise it was split.
Yeah, it split. Some time ago.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while. Yeah,
it has been a while, but I think...
Do you think that would have made a difference?
No, I think it would have been worse.
It would have been worse?
I think it's going to be worse. I think it would have been made worse because initially Paul Venables agreed to the mediation to speed up the payment and then went back on the agreement with the government and the Lord of Bothan that agreed, right, okay, we'll get the mediation, get them paid, let's get it done. They dragged it out and then rescinded the culpability that they accepted originally, saying, oh, we can't do that, it's not legally binding and all this kind of stuff. And it's that kind of behaviour. That's what the government enabled them to do. So you asked me, right? So
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's 2024.
Yeah.
The judgment originally was 2019, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What have they done from then till the week before the TV programme winner?
Zero.
Initiated the compensation scheme and just let it run.
And when you say initiate the compensation scheme...
That's as a result of the judgment, though.
But for those listening, what does that mean and what does that entail? Because, like, compensation scheme,
as
a blanket, just means everyone's getting paid and everything's going to be fixed. That's obviously not the case, is it?
No, because you'll have people who... So, the three schemes that are out there affect three different types. So you've got the original claimants that took the post office to court. They're the ones that ended up with about 20 grand each in the end, because obviously the solicitor's fees had to be paid and all that had to come out of that. That's the amount the post office first settled. Then there's another...
And was that everyone? Like,
no, that was, that was the initial claims of like 500, I think.
So just people who were aware that it had happened to them?
Yeah, so these were the original people that took the post office to court.
Cool, so they knew it wasn't them and then... Okay. So they were in a better position than most to actually know it was
the regular. But the majority of those have still not been paid out of the additional compensation scheme, which was set up to pay them back. So, for example, whatever money you've paid over, they still haven't had back. Then you've got the interest, then you've got your claim. So let's say, for example, they originally took 25 grand off person A 20 years ago. So in 2019, you're in the compensation scheme, you've got your 20 grand, which is a pittance. But then you've gone through the new scheme to say, right, you weren't dealt with properly, you're going to go through a new scheme. That was in 2019, and some of these people have still not had their payments. They've had interim payments, but when they're being asked to submit documents, say, for example, right, how have you come up with your compensation?
Yeah, I've come to
For example, you came in with a fee of £1 million. So you're going to put in your original 20 grand, you're going to put in your interest, you're going to put in your earning potential that you've lost over those 20 years, you're going to put interest on all of that.
Yeah.
And all of your consequential losses that you can think of. You get to, they want you to prove and document how you got to it on top of what you've already given them in black and white. So they're fighting it every which corner, every which turn. They're slowing the process down to drag their feet. And that's happening still today.
None of that makes sense. So I obviously have no connection or understanding how all the system of the post office works, right? But for someone who works in tech, in my head,
it's really simple.
This whole thing really simple. Sounds simple, and it sounds like people are purposely
dragging their feet.
Because surely, as you said, plug in a USB, give me all the data, we'll go through it. You can figure out the numbers. To be fair, you could probably feed it into a piece of AI today and just ask it to fix it out, right?
Potentially.
So with that second compensation scheme, with these interim payments and asking everyone to kind of prove where they've got to, surely that has just halted everything. Because you can put your projection together, but I can't go back. Like, I doubt people have 20 years ago working
records.
Paper,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what slowed it up. I think up to last week or the week before, the main character hadn't had his payments done.
Do you think, and this is obviously a pretty straightforward question, right? But do you think, had that programme not gone out, this would have just continued to stay under the carpet, no one would have bothered, no noise?
So, yes, it wouldn't have got it wouldn't have got the headlines, and it wouldn't have got the prominence it deserves.
Yes.
So it's been in the headlines, it's been in the news, and for some reason it's just never taken the traction.
No, that it's never like... Grip to the community.
But this is, unfortunately, an example of where the state gets something wrong, or an organisation, a corporation, do something wrong, and everyone just holds their hands up. Like, Grenfell was how many years ago, and they're still not sorted that out.
Hillsborough
is another one.
It was interesting.
The blood scandals could be even worse.
Yeah.
But so they're three big ones you can think of recently.
Yeah.
And it's Tolman Memorial.
It's interesting you say that, because I watched a very quick snippet of it. I think it was on ITV. They had victims of the post office scandal, victims of Grenfell, and victims of Hillsborough, and they were all discussing basically how government does jack shit, essentially, when big problems like this erupt. Obviously, we're here to get to grips with what the hell's going on, but £92,000 with yourself, that it's kind of fixed. You say there's a few other kind of points along that journey where things don't match. how does then, like, what happens with your post office or over those, over the last 20 years? Like, what's happened?
So we've had incidents. You're talking about additional loss that we've actually put in, or?
I'm talking about that, but also in general, like, how has it been working for a company that is...
Oh, I despise it.
Constantly blaming you.
I hate it. So, when we took over originally, I had got into the post office, learned how to do it all, and I said to them, we can make some money out of this, just push these search services, and we went locks up for it. Then when I had my first issue, and then I refused to make it good, they came and did the audit, we had an argument, I said, I'm not serving on it anymore, I said, Mom, just get rid of the thing, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
She convinced me to keep it, that's fine. Had a few more problems with it since then, but then they're very much, it's your fault, you sort it out, it's your problem. And they're very unhelping, very, very cold, very bitter, very distant. And then when we've had the problems, for the little that they pay you and the remuneration that you get, it doesn't justify the work that you put in. So I've said to Mum, obviously you're at retirement age, we're doing the bare minimum.
Yeah.
They provide us an alarm system, we deposit our own cash here, so it saves me having to go and take it somewhere else.
Nice.
I said, with that convenient part, that's fine. But I said, when you're not here, like, for the first time, she's going to go on holiday in March. I'm not paying a sub to come and cover it for her.
Yeah.
Because it's going to lose me £400-£500 a week.
Wow.
So it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
I'll just close it.
But I've
got no patience for them whatsoever. So the minute I have where Mum will eventually agree to get rid of it,
it's gone.
It's a hangover of a different era, a different time. The world has adapted and moved on, and they have failed to go with it, unfortunately.
If you were to click your fingers and the system was to change straight away, and I don't mean click your fingers and everyone gets paid and all goes back to normal, but just in relation to the system, if you were to click your fingers and it would change to the ideal system that you would want, what would that look like? Would it be much different to what the one you're using at the moment?
For me personally, I haven't worked with it for a few years to know specifically. For me, I don't know is the honest answer. I'm not going to lie.
It
needs to be a robust accounting piece of software. Now, the fact that it was rejected for another project before it was sold to the post office by Fujitsu tells you everything. Because it was laden with bugs before they even tried to use it. So if it did what it said on the tin, did all the accounting stuff, and allowed better integration with new technologies, then I think there's room for it. Because you see other parcel providers are giving you a station.
Oh, they're miles ahead.
You've got your QR code, your readers. You can't even integrate any of that
stuff. Post office is a pain in the ass. So this is just coming from someone who uses it as a service, right? So the podcast is part of it, and I'm sure most people listening are aware of Rambling to the Sea for the shop that we have. Like, we just have a bookshop online, right? And actually, that's what I deposited with your mum downstairs and got the receipt for. But with the post office, so they got hacked. They had that ransom, whatever.
For the international stuff.
Yeah. So what happened was, I'd go to the post office, I'd dump everything on the counter, and she'd be like, you need to take that away.
And I'm
like,
why?
She's like, we can't take it. I'm like, all right. Now, even with the UK stuff, it takes them a while. They also have to scan it and it goes through. But within that time then, I obviously had to shift, and we went, just go to Parcel to Go and they figure it out. I've used every courier service you can think of, every UPS, FedEx, Blimmin, Royal Mail, this, that, the other. You literally put in your information, click a button, they send you what you need to print out. It's one thing, you stick it to your package, and you hand it over. Internationals now with the post office, you take them in, they have to put them through the system, then they have to turn them over and make sure you've got your customs on it, then they have to put all of that in the system. It takes about 20 minutes to do one. Now, what I don't get, how the f*** are they making any money?
They're not. They're making a loss.
And then surely they're, like...
They're hemorrhaging money.
I don't know whether this is me being really cynical, but it almost feels like they're trying to drive it into the floor. Because, like... Every step of the way, like, as in, what I don't get is I only use it as a customer, right? But when I have to send things internationally and I use any of the courier service, and even actually within the UK, sometimes the package is too heavy and you've got to send it with the courier, it's so easy and it's so seamless, and it's relatively cheap compared to the post office.
So
what is going on?
So one of the problems you've got is it's a business that has been subsidised by the taxpayer time and immemorial. It's been allowed to get to where it is, and the problem you have is the post office have a network where people haven't looked at it and thought, right, what can we actually do with the post office other than what we already do? So that's one, that's elements of where they've lost service after service. So for example, I think they used to do the fishing licenses, DVLA.
They used to do DVLA,
loads of different stuff.
I used to get my...
bill payments, all that sort of stuff. So as they've lost services, they've not adapted fast enough to replenish it. So one of the things is the post office business as a whole will have a value to somebody other than the government. So one element is going to be, are they driving in a specific direction to enable a sale? That's a question.
I see what you mean.
Whereas what was done with Royal Mail was very similar.
Yeah.
And then off that, you have to then look at the other providers of those services that Royal Mail offer and that the post office facilitate for them. At some point, there's got to be a merging.
Mm.
But then the question is, who benefits financially?
And it's not normally anyone.
It's not me and you, is it?
No.
But if you know, so I said to Mum, take his Frank Mail off and don't argue about it.
Yeah, I heard that.
Because she doesn't get paid for it.
Oh, so you didn't get paid for Frank Mail?
No. That's what I said, take it off him, don't argue with him.
Oh wow!
As long as you were taking.
Oh wow! I never knew that. But it makes sense because you pay and then
the price. Exactly. Okay. Stupid things like that. Like somebody came and deposited like £50 worth of ones and twos, and my mum said, "Who said you could do that?" And I accidentally said that, "Yeah, don't remove." So not realise it, bloody bags of ones and twos. But we don't use that much copper, so it's took 25 minutes to earn 26p.
Oh wow!
Sorting all that out, processing it, bagging it up, sending it off.
Oh,
that's,
Jesus.
That's what the business model doesn't stack up in this day and world.
No.
It just doesn't make sense.
No.
So it's got to adapt, it's got to evolve.
Yeah.
But at the same token of time, you've got, it's all right sitting there saying that the postmasters are your biggest asset. Well,
but you've got to back them up as well and support them and help them, right? Just going back then, you spoke about those three compensation schemes and we kind of got halfway through the second one. What was the third one and what is kind of going on at the moment?
The historic one. So this is where, for example, if you approach a person and say, I believe I've been a victim of the system due to... So it's this historic shortfall scheme.
Yeah.
It's called. So what they'll say now is put in all your information, put in your claim, we'll review it. Do we agree with it? Yes or no? So you need your evidence to say,
yeah.
So in my yearly accounts for, say, 2014, we declared a loss with the post office of £14,000. So that's your record that you declared a loss of £14,000, as an example. So there's that £14,000 that person's going to claim for, as an example. Or if you haven't got that evidence, you need something else. So they'll say...
Right, but surely, and this might just be my naivety, but every post office obviously has accounts, right?
They do, but it depends how you operate yours. So for example, the post office for us runs through our partnership.
Okay.
Other people run it through the limited company, or they'll have a separate company set up for it. So obviously you do your own accounts for it anyway.
So wouldn't that be evidence enough in terms of what?
It would be if you recorded your losses. My dad never used to record us because it was an old partnership. So we have to go back to...
Oh, wow. So there are complications within the actual...
Correct, yeah. So within that, and there'll be examples even... I say now because I still don't believe it's a robust system now. There will be people that over the entire time will have microdosed their accounts since the beginning. And I'm talking over 20 years, so it was £100 short here, £200 short there. And when it's happening once every 18 months, if over 20 years people have been doing that, right, it's happened, we've checked. If you've got no staff, you're the only person that served, either you've made an error or it is what it is. Because at that point, you don't know it's the system. And there'll be a lot of that. And it's when you total up all that, there'll be people out there that are owed tens of thousands of pounds that still won't put their claims in. But this is how bad they are. My dad had a post office.
Yeah.
He had an audit. Everything was fine. No problem. They come again after a robbery's happened.
Okay.
They're here the next day. And when we're talking about the racial disparity of the way they treat people, the first words come out of the guy's mouth was, this is what you lot do. The money's going to be here, isn't it?
Wow.
So they did the audit, found nothing, no problems. And that's what they were like then.
Mad.
Yeah.
Mad.
I tried to have the least amount of interaction with the post office I could possibly have, because I just found them to be so antiquated and not willing to listen. I just thought, they've done nothing positive in my view to alleviate this situation.
Everything's been forced on them. But do you think they're also stereotypical in their view of post office, the people who run the post office, in terms of, like, as in maybe saying what he said to your uncle in relation to the robbery? It's almost as like they have a stereotype that it's these, like, corner shop runners who are running the post office.
That is evident when you listen to people's evidence of the way they speak to people and the way they treated them when they went in and they did their investigations or their interviews, or the way they treated people, the way they were conducting their searches, their behaviour. And a lot of people didn't realise their powers are as strong, if not stronger, than some of the police's in the way they're allowed to prosecute and investigate.
Bloody hell.
And that's where you have people that don't have the relevant qualifications going into a job as an investigator for the post office, becoming security managers, but don't have the right skill set originally, get trained up, admittedly.
However,
there are people in those jobs that wouldn't even got a job as a police officer. So it's almost the wrong type of people getting into that type of work with power that don't
know how, to the head, isn't it?
Pretty much, or don't know how to deal with it properly, or how to deal with situations correctly.
It sounds like an absolute clusterfuck of issues.
There's loads of issues, but there's no real solutions coming through from them. Other than trying to evade culpability any which way possible. Saying the right thing, like, we know we've been found guilty, we are doing what we can, and this typifies it. Nick Reed sat there, they've asked him a question, I don't know the answer to that, I don't think that's my job.
Yeah.
You're the CEO.
Yeah, yeah. If it's not your job, then hold on.
Not yours, then who's it?
Yeah, yeah, who's going
to
do it?
I've seen that look on his face before when we used to challenge him on stuff. I thought, the guy's not changed.
No.
He's the same slimy, smarmy.
Yeah.
I try not to swear.
No, like, I understand the
And I thought, they've just got... And then when they employed him, and then the whole thing about, obviously, the bonus thing that they did, I thought, he's just doing the same thing
he's
again.
He's just taking the piss, isn't he? Since... the programme's come out, and you were saying that kind of helped you put some dots together and maybe you look back at things. Have you discovered much in your own kind of, like, forensic analysis of looking back at your stuff?
That's what we're literally doing now, physically.
Right, okay. Yeah. And so what's the plan of action?
So for us, as a family, we've had a conversation. So I spoke to mum and said, obviously, what can you remember specifically what you used to ask Dad for, roughly? And we've got a rough idea. And now we've just got to then be able to put the evidence to go with it now. And that's kind of where we've got to.
Okay.
So we'll wait and see. If something comes, great. If it doesn't, you've tried. But equally, at the same token of time, it's... What you also don't want is people just putting in false claims.
Because it's coming
out of our taxes at the end of the day. And this comes to... something we spoke about before we started recording was... There are people that know they've been impacted, won't say and won't do anything, either out of they think they're not entitled, or they have a belief where no one's going to believe them. Mm. And there are two people I spoke to and said, no, it's not like that. Ring this person, speak to them, put your case forward, see what they say. You may not be in the post office now, but that doesn't mean you're not entitled to.
Yeah.
And it's about the right people getting the right recompense, because... We are fortunate that we managed to get through it. But there are times when things have been tight, historically, when mum and dad were running this shop before I took over again. And these types of instances of having to put the money in would have exacerbated it and made it worse.
Yeah, of course.
And that financial stress and pressure didn't necessarily need to be there.
No, of course not. Of course not.
So, yeah.
And I think... So, I think, just for the record, like, this is the first time we've met. And I think one thing that I've picked up from you is that... You're a very genuine, hard-working man who's like most of us. Run of the mill. We're parents of immigrants. We're children of immigrants. We're trying to kind of just better ourselves and send our kids to school and whatever, and kind of and better the next generation.
Yeah.
And everything that you seem to be saying is basically your parents were working hard, and most of the problems that were being kind of forced onto them were actually because of this shitty system. Doesn't it just make sense to just scrap the whole thing and just start again? Just be like, fuck it, the system don't work.
You'd like to think so, but they are wedded to the idea of keeping it. And I think they've just they've put an extension on the current system's license while they try and figure out how to get another system in place and for when they can get one in place. So they're still running with it.
How confident do you feel that your claim will go like all the way through this week?
At this minute, I'd say it's 50-50. You have to, yeah. And that's because, unfortunately, Dad wasn't educated, but he wasn't thick either.
Yeah.
He also, I can remember my first meeting with the accountant, with my dad, to go through the accounts, and he asked somebody, I thought, he's been doing this for years. And then it was evident that Dad basically knew what he was earning, knew what he should have been left with, anything that was in between, he weren't bothered about.
Yeah.
So it was what it was. So when I was getting ready to have the conversation with the banks about, okay, right, so we haven't borrowed anything since God knows how long, we want to renovate the shop.
Yeah.
So this was in 2013, so it would have been 2011 we started.
Cool.
And it was literally the house, the shop, nothing had been touched since 1982.
Oh, wow. So it was literally
Everything was the same. With the exception of in 2021, in 2001, we painted and decorated the flat.
Okay.
That was it. And the furniture you see now is the same.
Oh, wow.
From then.
No way.
Seriously.
That's very well looked after.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So then, the shop had nothing since 1982. It had a couple of new fridges in, and that was it. So where it's all bricked up now at the front, was all glass open. You just have to put posters on it and all sorts. And then there was asbestos in the tiles and the floor, it was everything.
Oh wow, so this is like proper old school. Yeah.
So when I went to the bank manager said, right, he asked me all these questions, I had no clue what it was. So I went back to the accountant, went and I re-educated, so there's certain things we changed the way we did, and this is why Dad wouldn't have kept his record of what he put in. Mum said, I need this much.
There you go.
He didn't make a comment. And that's where this is where people are gonna have the problem of operating like that.
Yeah.
So from that, when we did the renovation work then in 2013, we had one issue then with the post office, which is what led to my disagreement with them.
Okay, yeah.
Was because of that, and that was to do with they took all the post office stock away, bought it back, and then tried to charge us for the stock again. Even though they took it away and bought it back.
Oh, God. I honestly feel for how frustrating it must be for you guys. Yeah.
So that happened, and then that was about $5,000 worth of.
Bloody hell.
Just in stock value of what they took. And then bought back up their
and
own
stuff. And trying to charge you it
again, bringing it back. Yeah, so that was then. So that's what we invested then.
Yeah.
So now, like I said before, we've got one last major thing we want to do now.
Yeah.
So we did the development downstairs, cost us $100,000 then in 2013.
Yeah.
So to do the same work again, it's about $180,000.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That's the first quite a bad.
Yeah.
No, roughly.
Yeah.
So we thought, right, okay. So we spoke to the bank, got a rough idea. Obviously, we had the problem with Liz Truss's interest rates. So that kind of slowed us up now. So we're in the process now. We've got pre-app planning to develop the site.
Yeah.
And then the question is, what do we do then? Do we just build all the flats that we can get planning for?
Yeah.
And then lease the shop, run the shop, renovate the shop, and that's right. That next final stage in terms of right, Mum would be ready to retire in that sense. What do I do? Do I run it? Do I carry it? And this is kind of where we got to. In terms of that's where the whole account side of the argument was coming in and understanding it all. But now I know where we need to get to now to do it all.
Yeah.
I haven't had the conversation with the banks. I know what they're going to say based on our accounts currently, because obviously the interest rates have took up all their headroom. So we go again, you see, on that side. So that's where the next set of investment will potentially be in the next couple of years.
Bloody hell.
It's a long, hard one. Yeah.
Let's say you guys get the shop renovated. Let's say you make these into flats. Your mom gets to retire. You guys can live off the rental income. And you lease the shop or sell the shop to someone else, whatever it is. How would you feel at that point getting rid of the shop after it being in the family since 1982 And actually, it's probably, I think, for you, part and parcel of who you are, because you were born into it, you've lived it, you've seen your parents go through it, you've come into it.
I had this conversation with my friend earlier, just literally about the business development side of stuff, because he's just reinvesting in his business.
Yeah.
And he was thinking about, obviously, I need to do this, and he said, so just do all your development stuff first, then come to me, we'll have a chat, I'll show you what we've done, what we're going to do. If you can get your capital, or you can get your equity out and invest it and get yourself some passive income, that'd be great for you. But this is how we're going to do ours, and you might be able to do the same thing. And while we were having that conversation, I was sat and I spoke to three customers I haven't seen for ages.
Yeah.
And that's the bit I'll miss.
It's people. It's just the people, isn't it? Yeah, the community.
Yeah, that's what it's about. Like, we do a lot for the charity, a lot for community. The stuff I didn't realise my dad did until he passed away.
Yeah, and then people come up to you and they're like, oh, your dad did this for me. And
that sort of stuff. So we've carried all that stuff on anyway.
Yeah.
And we're lucky that with the shop we get access to a charity fund. We've just given, I think this year, really, we give about $3,500 out in grants through the charity scheme.
Nice.
But it's stuff we're able to do through the business. I'll miss being able to do that, but I want to still... the headache would definitely go for 100%. But in terms of what it's allowed us to do as a family, what it's allowed my family to do,
to have
a good life out of it, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
We've been fortunate, but the thing that I take most from it is how many people we've managed to help along the way as well. Not just us being able to earn from it, it's what we've been able to do for other people as well.
It's not just feeding yourself, you're feeding everyone along the way that comes through.
I'll tell you what, COVID was a good example, and I said to somebody, one of the problems you've got is all these Hooray Henrys have come along willing to help and do something. It's great. All the help they're going to give you.
Yeah.
I said, the ones that stay afterwards, when they all go back to work, they're the ones that the genuine ones. The problem is there were too many people there with their phones out, taking a picture and video, let me drop off this parcel. I haven't got time for them idiots, man. They do your head in. They're the ones you don't want to help.
Yeah.
The ones you want to help are the ones that the genuine ones.
Yeah, you're just doing it for the sake of it, right?
And that's the kind of stuff, maybe it enables me to do more volunteer stuff. Great. Yeah. It's good. Like when I said to, my wife said, so what, this is hypothetical, like if it does
work out.
Yeah. And she said, so what are you going to do? I'm going to do nothing.
Just chill.
I'm going to do nothing.
Yeah, first time in however long.
I'm going to do nothing. But I've got to get there first.
Yeah.
That's where we're trying to get to. But then my thing is that I see no future for the post office being... So if I did it myself...
Yeah, if you carried it on.
Put another 10 years of me into it, it wouldn't be with that.
It would just be the shop as its own.
The shop, any other additional service that I needed, I just wouldn't work with them. It just makes no financial sense.
Fair.
At all.
No, it's a real shame. You spoke about earlier how your father passed away not knowing what we are now fortunate to be aware of, right? What do you... This is quite a personal question, I guess, in some sense, but... What do you wish your dad knew before he passed away that would have helped you think, I'm glad he knew that?
Just knowing.
Just knowing that it wasn't anything to do with
him. Yeah, that's it. Because he was a man of faith.
Yeah.
And then he was very religious towards the end, the last 15, 20 years of his life. And he'd always had faith before that, but he drank it, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then he found his way eventually with his ill health. And then it was, the galling part for him was, and I could tell because it was the same thing for me, was that knowing that potentially somebody you trusted, could have been somebody stealing from you. And bearing in mind, the people that have worked for us haven't just been our employees, they've been part of our family as well.
And some of
the guys that have been with us have been 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And then one of them, she was with my dad when he passed away. And it's that type of connection when you're thinking, right, to have thought potentially bad of those people and then not knowing that it wasn't that person or those people, that's the galling part of it. Mm. And mine is just one example. There are two people who didn't survive that I'm aware of, or three I think now, that didn't survive to see their convictions quashed.
Oh my God.
And then these are the people that you're really feeling for. Ours is, like I say, a lucky story that we didn't get thumped all the way through.
Let's say, for argument's sake, that £92,000 wasn't like that person.
Oh, it would have been ruined.
That would have been a game over.
It would have been ruined. 100%. So you're talking back then in the late 90s to early 2000s. So I'm thinking, that would have ruined us.
It'd be what? Like
no ifs or buts.
£250,000 grand, £200,000 these days.
Rest.
Yeah,
it would have completely ruined us.
Fucking.
Yeah.
How then? And this is just more out of personal interest. Is how have then some of these post offices that have been kind of like, so obviously yours got fixed or whatever. For those who haven't, and then they've been given these massive fines or charges, how have they managed to actually deal with them?
Well, so from the people that I'm aware of, reading all that sort of stuff, they've either borrowed, used their wages from their other income.
Yeah.
If say they had a shop, they took it from the shop till.
Basically,
borrowed money from friends, family, remortgaged, took out loans.
So it would have crushed them financially, irrespective of the ability to pay for it.
And the worst thing is, when you sit down and you're having a conversation with them, they lay on thick.
Yeah.
It's your fault, it's your liability, you've got to pay. If you don't do it, this will happen to you, we can do this, we can do that.
They put it on heavy.
And the stupid thing was, right, and I'm aware of someone that paid back a sum of money, and then I can remember him saying, look, he was shocked I paid it back. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. I could hear it in his voice. That like I was like, and then when you're reading the statistics about their targeted percentage for recovery, in this modern day we think it's quite low.
Yeah.
But the way they were pursuing people, you'd think it'd be a lot higher.
Yeah.
That was
something
is
fishy.
Yeah.
Mad. Okay.
Imagine getting paid a bonus for getting back money that the post office thinks it's lost. So how's that going to influence the way you investigate and pursue a case?
I would love to talk to someone who was in that position, because there has to be a point where you ethically realise that you're clawing money back that the post office isn't owned. Because there's no... I'm sorry, after the first... Maybe the first person, say if I was new to the job, first person I spoke to said, it's not me, I'd be, maybe... Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, 12th.
This is where that line is happening to nobody else, it's only you. This is what they used to say to people. Now...
And it's not, in today's day and age, everything is so instantly accessible, it's impossible to do that.
See, none of these people have come forward as whistleblowers, or even when they've given their evidence, they've been extremely scant with their evidence. So one of the investigators last week actually said, I think he still did it. Last week, he said, I think he still did that.
Bloody
hell. He said, I still think he's at fault. This is what the guy said in his cross-examination last week, or whatever you want to call it. Said, I apologise for what's gone on and all the rest of it, but I still think you're guilty. And when you've got people like that with that mentality, today, knowing what they're supposed to know, and knowing what they did know, coming out with lines like that, that's what you got. It's endemic with them.
I can't help but in my head draw parallels with this and Brexit, to the point of it's kind of like, it's not our fault, like, in terms of it's the government, like, we told you this is going to be great, it is great, shut up and accept it.
Yeah.
And it feels like that same type of attitude is in the post office, in terms of, it's not our fault, shut up, accept it, deal with it yourself.
So, if I'm putting in touch with a Fed rep that's retired, and the analogy was that the problem is the post office needed the system because they were susceptible to nefarious people doing certain scams.
And
traceability and record keeping was very difficult for them unless they physically went and visited site or branch, and if somebody had three or four sites, they could move stock around and move cash around.
Easy.
So the idea of the Horizon system was to make the auditing process a lot simplistic, a lot easier. And the problem was they relied on it so much without interrogating it that they thought you were guilty before they even walked in the door. They'd have all your audit trail, have all your key presses, everything. Well, she must have done something wrong. It's not here, then where is it? Because they were so used to having had their pants pulled down for years that they just assumed everybody was guilty.
I see what you mean.
So the money they were losing hand over fist in terms of negligence, robberies, scams, whatever it was,
yeah,
they were trying to recover as much as possible.
Because
thinking on the back foot, it's always a postmaster, so.
Yeah.
And that's where that mentality is.
Bloody hell.
Really anecdotal. So we had an audit a few years ago. The lady that did the audit ended up coming back to do relief work for us as a relief postmaster. Lovely lady. Soul to the earth. But they're few and far between.
Yeah, I can well imagine. Especially in what you've discussed. We've spoken for about an hour, and I have to obviously just say thank you for your time.
I appreciate
it. And the ability to dive into this in so much depth. My last question is, and I think I've covered everything, is there anything in particular that you would like to say or share or include before we wrap up?
So one of the things I've said is that some people are not coming forward still. Now, I've said ours is a lucky escape story, and there are people that will watch or will listen to whether it be this or something else. If you've been impacted, you have a right. Go to the Federation reps. They're on your side and they will help you. Ask for what is rightfully yours and do not let them keep getting away with this. They are relying on people's civility to get away with this. The tip of the iceberg is what is known about so far. The sheer depth of the money that they have taken from people is unreal. And the fact that they've gotten away with it for so long is just emboldened them to keep thinking that they're going to get away with it. So don't let them get away with it. If you think you have paid money to the post office that you don't believe they should have had, claim for it. It's your right to do it, and do it sooner rather than later.
No, thank you.
All right, so that's the end of another podcast episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed putting it together. If you want to support the work that I'm doing, then consider becoming a Patreon member or a YouTube member via the links in the description below. Otherwise than that, I just want to say thank you for making it this far to the end. And a quick shout out to our Patreon members, Sean Singh, Rajvinder Kaur, Gurpreet Danjal, Gagan Singh, Asmin Jaswal, Ramneet Gaur, Rav Singh, Ramneet Gaur, Anish Mann, Gurdeep Bath, Gurpreet Singh, and Jazz Dylan. Also, a quick shout out to our YouTube members, Rav Singh, V, Jazz Dylan, Ravi Singh, Simi Sandhu, A Little History of the Sikhs, Wushu Man, Dadajit Kaur, G Singh, Gary Podmar, and N Singh. Otherwise than that, thank you for tuning in. Hopefully I'll see you in the next podcast episode. Bye.